Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens. Transform your home with the warmth of an Irish-made kitchen. Cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
Email todaycb at rte.ie.
In amongst the famous faces at Donald Trump's inauguration this week were leading figures from the world of sport, FIFA's Gianni Infantino, boxer Mike Tyson, and the president of the UFC, Dana White. Well, sport has played a big role in Donald Trump's success. He even invited Hulk Hogan to speak at the 2024 Republican National Convention. So here to discuss Donald Trump's relationship with sport and how he's used it to his own ends is Ken Early from the Second Captains podcast. Ken, good morning to you.
How are you doing, Claire?
Tell me a little bit about Donald Trump's attitude to sport and how it has helped him right throughout his career.
Well, it's actually been, I think, a pretty big part of his life. I mean, there is one sport that he loves and plays, which is golf. But I actually think that the most important sport in his life has been a sport which actually isn't really a sport, but kind of the fusion of sport and TV, which is pro wrestling. Trump, I think, he used to go to the early WrestleMania events and was just blown away by them. Seeing the crowd, seeing the excitement, seeing the way they responded to the kind of the attitude and the way that the wrestlers went on. How people really loved this, despite the fact that it wasn't taken seriously. It was sort of mocked by, like, let's say, you know, the establishment. They just didn't take it seriously. But Trump, I think, understood that there was something really, really powerful going on there.
So maybe he was taking cues for his later political career from that this is how you whip up a crowd. This is how you get a large audience on side with this sort of showmanship, which, of course, we've seen borne out at all of those rallies, indeed, the debates right back to his first run at the White House.
Oh, completely, yeah. So he actually brought that sort of wrestling attitude into those. I mean, the 2015 Republican primaries were some of the most incredible television I've ever seen. I mean, it was kind of so unprecedented what Trump was doing. You know, if you remember, there was so many of them running for it, and there'd be this big line, you know, 12 candidates, and Trump is always there in the middle. And he was just destroying these people. You know, you had like Jeb Bush and Marco Rubio, who's now the Secretary of State, I think. And you had, Ted Cruz and all of these sort of conventional type politicians. And Trump was just destroying them, just insulting them, you know, Lion's Head, Little Marco, Low Energy Jeb. And people were like, you can't do that. You can't do this. You know, it seemed sort of, it was because nobody had sort of done it before. It was like, well, this is obviously, people will see that this is nonsense. People loved it.
And then when it comes to UFC and Dana White, who's been right in the middle of things around the inauguration and the victory rallies that Donald Trump has had, he's clearly developed a relationship with him as well that goes back a number of years. Was it more about that business model and the fact that it could attract that audience of young men and that it veered right in general too?
Well, I think, again, what you had in the case of MMA, or particularly the UFC promotion, which was developing later than wrestling, you had that same situation of a sport which was not respectable for slightly different reasons in the case of MMA, because we're talking here about real violence, and there was a lot of sort of people might characterize as pearl clutching about this. One of the most famous kind of condemnations of it came from Senator John McCain, who described it as human cockfighting. And obviously he wasn't in favor of this, and how can any decent person be in favor of this? Now, Donald Trump has always understood that if somebody like John McCain is saying something is bad, then that thing is good. So
for his audience.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, it's the kind of thing that happens in this, you know, casinos and these types of places that Trump owns. So again, he hosted these events, which I think is how he kind of first became close with Dana White more than 20 years ago. The Fertitta brothers were the owners at that time of the UFC, casino owners like Trump. So it sort of was, I'm sure that he wouldn't necessarily have understood the potential or how big this thing could get. I mean, this sport is huge now, particularly among you know, predominantly younger men who I guess wouldn't be super woke, to use the Trump terminology. Mm-hmm. You know, and it's an interesting sport economically. The Fertitta brothers ran a really brutal operation in terms of how the workers or the fighters were treated. So I remember, you know, 10 years ago when I was covering these events when Conor McGregor was first winning titles in that sport, the economics of it were that the fighters were earning about 10% of the revenue of the UFC. So 10% of the revenue the UFC made was going to the fighters who were actually doing all of the things. And consider what these guys are doing. Like, this is dangerous work. Every time you're involved in one of these fights, it's a potentially life-altering beating that you're risking. But the basic fees, I think at the time, were $8,000 to fight, $8,000 to win. So you're talking about $16,000 or maybe $12,000 to fight, $12,000 to win. These are, you know, peanuts that they were getting.
Yeah. And how does that compare, that 10% of the revenue going to the fighters or the competitors? How does that compare to other sports? Have we a comparable measure?
Well, say the Premier League would be, I think it's currently around 65% of the money the Premier League makes is flowing through to the players.
Right.
Most of the American sports, the NFL, the Major League Baseball, the NBA, it's around 50%. And the reason for that is that in those sports, they've got powerful players unions, which have been active for many, many decades. And they've had strikes, you know, they have sort of labor negotiations, pay deals, all that sort of stuff. It's highly organized. In the UFC, you know, it's the chances of setting up a union there. I mean, they really brutally crack down on any of that sort of stuff. I think the response of a lot of the fighters has been quite interesting. Rather than do what their forerunners in other sports did and sort of organizing a union in spite of opposition from the owners and all of the difficulties of that, they've gone completely the other direction. So it's almost embracing the kind of brutal, like accepting the brutality and unfairness of the situation, and instead adopting like a determination to succeed as an individual.
Then in terms of other sports and how he has used sport to further his own aims, he had in his first presidency attacked Colin Kaepernick, the San Francisco's 49ers quarterback, Megan Rapinoe as well, the captain of the US women's soccer team. How did that play out for him?
Well, you know, when he was president the last time, his main attractions with sport took the form of attacking on Twitter people who were doing stuff, athletes who were doing things that sort of he sensed, this is winding up my people, let's have a go. So the one big example was the NFL players when Kaepernick, you mentioned, who was the quarterback for the San Francisco 49ers, started to kneel. Or was sitting, I think, originally during the anthems, and then started to kneel when it became apparent that sitting was considered to be wildly disrespectful to the national anthem. So kneeling was a sort of a more respectful version of not standing. But Trump was attacking these players. They hate their country. You know, they should be suspended without pay. They should be fired. You know, get them out of there. Get them off the field. You know, to sort of rile up. To rile up the base. Megan Rapinoe was another huge example of this, the footballer for the US women's national team.
But you know, he's got these really big sporting events coming up during this term now, and he mentioned them. He's gone out of his way to mention them over the last couple of days, the Olympics and the Soccer World Cup. How do you think he might approach them, given everything that you've just said about how he has really used sport to advance his agenda?
Well, I think we're going to be seeing a lot of him at these events. I don't think he's going to be hiding away, although you never know. I mean, it's a couple of years down the road. I mean, he's turned up at a couple of football games recently. And when he appears in a football stadium now, the whole place goes mad. You know, American football, gridiron. When he turns up at a stadium and people realize he's there, the place goes mad. Maybe in 2 years it won't be like that. You know, things change for politicians. Sometimes a stadium is a risky environment for a politician. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think I remember seeing Bertie Ahern getting booed at Lansdowne Road before. You know, it can get a little bit it can get a little bit risky. But assuming that, you know, if things were as they are at the moment, which, okay, they probably won't be, he will be absolutely glorying this, because there's no greater magnet for attention than a World Cup or an Olympics. And when you can sort of sit there and be the central figure, the center of attention, the person who's late, like the emperor who's late on the games.
Yeah.
I mean, this is absolutely, this is going to be, I mean, he can't wait.
We've a long way to go, Ken, until we get to that point, but we'll be watching on keenly. Thank you so much for being with us and taking us through all of that. Ken Early from the Second Captains podcast.
Get in touch on WhatsApp 0870 32 32 32.